This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
in Burundi, more than 500 people have been killed in the past year, most of them by the ruling party, youth wing and security forces, according to a recent report from a Burundian human rights group. The allegations have raised concerns as the country heads towards a contentious referendum.
That's Mohamed Yusuf reporting. Full details coming up.
Also in Kenya, a government critic was charged for his participation in the symbolic swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga, and the EU embarks on investigations into alleged fraud and corruption in refugee assistance programs.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: in Kenya, a government critic appeared in court today on the outskirts of Nairobi. Maguna Maguna was charged for his participation in the symbolic swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga. The government says Maguna Maguna abetted last week's illegal oath, an action that the government says is treasonous. It also charges him with belonging to the National Resistance Movement, an opposition group the government has branded a criminal organization. Maguna entered no plea, saying that his case should be heard by a court in Nairobi. He remains detained despite a court ruling to release him. His arrest has prompted unrest in the West, an opposition stronghold.
In Burundi, more than 500 people have been killed in the past year, most of them by the ruling party youth wing and security forces, according to a recent report from a Burundian human rights group. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi. The allegations have raised concern as the country heads towards a contentious referendum.
The report, titled Do Not Play With Fire, documents the killings, disappearances and torture in the hands of Burundi's security agencies and the ruling party youth wing, the Imbonerakure. According to the investigators, more than 500 people were killed in Burundi in 2017 and more than 10,000 are behind bars. Pierre Cleve Mponimba is the head of the Association for the Protection of Human Rights and Detained Persons. All the cases we documented, those people died at the hands of military, police or Imbonerakure. Some of them were accused of practicing witchcraft and some were killed on land-related issues. The rights group notes all the allegations were fabricated and believe these people were killed because of their political affiliations. Mponimba, who is living in exile, says the human rights situation in Burundi is getting worse. Since I began following prisoners' rights, I have never seen more than 11,800 prisoners in Burundian prisons. It is very sad and shameful. The prison can only host 4,050 individuals. They live in squalid conditions. Many of them are political prisoners. For us, we say that human rights violation now is on a very high level in Burundi. Burundi's minister in charge of human rights, Martin Nevibandi, refused the allegation in the report. No country is a paradise in the world. People die. But saying that the situation got worse into 2017, while what we have in our report shows improvements, it surprises us so much. It's what we always say, people do not know how to separate politics and activism. They mix contesting the power and human rights actions. In all their reports, they want to show security forces are involved in human rights violations. According to the UN Refugee Agency, more than 430,000 Burundians have fled the country since 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for a controversial third term. Most of the refugees cite human rights abuses, continued political uncertainty and humanitarian crisis as a reason for fleeing. In December, Burundi's government proposed constitutional changes that would, among other things, allow Nkurunziza to stay in office beyond 2020. The referendum on the proposal takes place in May. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The EU has embarked on investigations into alleged fraud and corruption in refugee assistance programs in Uganda. Some donor agencies have even threatened to withdraw support to Uganda if no action is taken in response to the reports. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda has long been applauded for its progressive policy towards the hosting of refugees from different countries. However, its efforts could be tainted by allegations of fraud and misappropriation of funds meant for refugees. A statement from the European Union, EU delegation in Uganda, confirms that the body has received complaints that some of the officials in Uganda's Office of the Prime Minister, or PM, may have diverted funds meant for refugee aid. Emmanuel Jezaho is the press and information officer of the delegation of the European Union to Uganda.
The heads of the European Union member states in Uganda have been notified through our implementing partners, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees and the World Food Programme, of allegations of malfeasance and corruption in managing refugee assistance programs in the country. The EU has been providing funding to these two UN agencies for these programs, and as soon as these allegations were made, were brought to the attention of the government of Uganda as well.
According to Jezaho, the EU has formally submitted the case to the EU's anti-fraud office, OLAF, for investigation.
The European Union takes a zero-tolerance approach when it comes to any allegations of misconduct occurring on EU-funded projects, and even more so when this has a potential negative effect on an already vulnerable population, such as refugees and host communities.
Some of the complaints allege that OPM officials and aid workers have been inflating refugee figures in order to attract more financial support, which is then illegally shared. However, Jezaho does not divulge how much money is involved or the section affected most, for fear of interfering with ongoing investigations.
I cannot go into the specificities of the claims because they are subject to further investigation. We wait for the investigators to probe these allegations, and we believe they will come to a logical conclusion.
In a statement, Uganda's Minister of State for Relief, Disaster Management and Refugees, Musa Icheru, acknowledged receipt of the allegations. The statement says in part that the leadership in the Office of the Prime Minister, which oversees refugee issues, is working with stakeholders, including the United Nations, to establish the facts and truth and taking remedial action. Jezaho says the EU is keenly following the investigations being done by the Uganda government.
We are monitoring the developments of these investigations. We will continue to coordinate closely with the government and with partners so that we find a strict and thorough review of refugee operations in Uganda to ensure that critical services to refugees can be provided efficiently and transparently.
Uganda hosts about 1.5 million refugees from mainly South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Somalia, Rwanda, Eritrea, Sudan, and Ethiopia. They are given relief items including land for settlement, food rations, and clothing, among others, while in Ugandan settlements. Most of the relief aid is mobilized through donor funding with the European Union and US government as some of the major donors. In July last year, Uganda hosted a refugee summit with a target of raising $2 billion for refugee funding. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
On this International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation, the United Nations is calling for the eradication of the traditional practice which causes extreme physical and psychological harm to millions of women and girls worldwide. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations says more than 200 million girls and women in 30 countries are currently living with the harmful and dangerous consequences of female genital mutilation. Young girls between infancy and 15 years of age are subjected to the practice, which mainly occurs in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. The World Health Organization reports FGM confers no benefits, only serious problems, including severe bleeding, infections, complications in childbirth, and increased risk of newborn deaths. irrefutable evidence exists regarding the many serious lifelong health consequences that arise from the procedure. Nevertheless, the WHO reports the practice persists because of myths and misconceptions. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says one dangerous myth is that only girls who undergo the procedure can enter womanhood and be considered respectable. She says people often believe there is little risk of harm for girls and women if female genital mutilation is performed by a doctor or other healthcare professional.
This is not the truth. WHO is completely against any health worker helping to do this practice. FGM is a harmful practice and may lead to physical, mental, and sexual health complications regardless of who performs it.
FGM is far from being eradicated, but Shaib tells VOA slow progress is being made in communities around the world. She cites the case of Sudan, a country that has a high level of FGM. With the help of several UN agencies and financing from Britain and Ireland, she says the practice is becoming more rare in communities across the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States Treasury Department has imposed sanctions on a general in the DRC's army and three militia leaders. Under the sanctions, Americans are banned from doing business with the four men, and any assets they have in the U.S. are frozen. The U.S. government says General Mahindu Akilimundos is accused of a brutal crackdown on civilians and has cooperated profitably with rebel groups in northern Kivu province. The others are accused of leading forces that committed mass killings, recruited child soldiers, and plundered communities. Last week, the United Nations Security Council also imposed sanctions on all four.
Hundreds of people are fleeing Cameroon's English-speaking towns following clashes between the military and gunmen believed to be armed separatists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the French-speaking town of Mboda, where some of the English speakers are escaping too.
A dozen vehicles transporting at least 220 people from Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region arrived in the French-speaking town of Buda Tuesday morning. Among them is Donatien Fotsu, a 55-year-old businessman. He says he, his wife and four children fled from the town of Bamenda after three consecutive days of heavy gunfire between the military and armed separatists.
The army people and cause all that problem. They just do as they like.
He says Cameroon military has been invading their neighborhoods, shooting indiscriminately and arresting and torturing citizens. He says the torture and the killing inflicted on them has made the people so frightened that when they see a military vehicle, they start escaping. Christopher Maingong, a 27-year-old farmer, says he left his village on the outskirts of Njinikom before the deadline because he had anticipated there would be bloody conflicts triggered by the heavy deployment of Cameroon's military to English-speaking towns and villages.
I was afraid. I did not know what was really the problem. Since we have military that they cannot communicate, the next day, you have to tell us what's happening, the gunshot was this, was that. So even today, I'm afraid. I don't know what's going wrong.
The tensions began mounting when Cameroon announced that separatist leader Ayuk Tabe Julius and 36 of his supporters had been arrested in Nigeria and transferred to Cameroon. They have not been seen in public since then, fueling speculation that they may have been killed. Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma said in a statement that all 37 are still alive, but the announcement did not calm their angry supporters. Cameroon says seven villages have been burned and at least 20 people, including soldiers and separatists, have been killed in the ongoing violence. The unrest in Cameroon began in November 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets, calling for reforms and greater autonomy. The situation degenerated with separatist calls for independence and the rise of an armed separatist movement, prompting a crackdown of the military. Moki, Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News, Buda, Western Cameroon.
African and European foreign ministers met in Italy today to address the ongoing migrant crisis. The leaders are looking for solutions to help curb the flow of migrants from Africa to Europe. Reporter Josephine McKenna attended the conference and spoke with me about what the leaders are doing about the migrant situation.
Well, this was an important conference that brought together foreign ministers from France, Germany, Italy, and also some major African countries, including Niger, Sudan, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Chad. But there were many others, of course, as well. And they were there to talk about finding common solutions, a shared responsibility.
What is the Italian government doing?
Well, the Italian Foreign Minister Angelino Alfano, who hosted this conference in Rome, said Italy has decided to refinance the Fund for Africa, providing an extra 80 million euros over the next 2 years to support social and economic development projects, and in particular targeting young people, just to try and create opportunities in African countries and try and slow down the desire to leave Africa, as we've seen with so many young migrants wanting to reach Europe. So that was an important initiative there. Great discussion about what's going on with the repatriations. The International Organization for Migration, which has been playing a key role repatriating migrants from Libya back to their home countries, and also broader discussion about how to stop people traffickers from continuing to send migrants into very dangerous situations, crossing the Mediterranean in search of a better life in Europe.
What are African leaders saying? What are they offering as a solution to some of the issues?
Well, as we know, African countries themselves are very concerned about the number of migrants that are suffering and suffering abuse and exploitation and even violence, particularly when they're trapped in places like Libya for months. And they also want to work together with European countries to try and generate more opportunities in their home countries and stop this flow of migrants. This is an opportunity for these countries to work together and also try and develop greater, broader international mobilization in the fight against smugglers and human trafficking networks, notably through a protocol and trying to supplement the United Nations conventions against organized crime.
In another matter regarding migrants, there was a shooting that occurred over the weekend where 6 African migrants were wounded. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this shooting not only shocked Italians across the country, but it made headlines around the world, and it has completely electrified the Italian election campaign. 6 Africans were shot in a small town called Macerata, about 200 miles north of Rome. And the suspect, Luca Traini, made a fascist salute, saying that he was motivated by the murder of a local woman there. Now, a Nigerian man has been arrested in relation to her murder, and Traini told investigators he wanted to avenge this murder and do something about immigration. Now, the lawyer representing this man, this suspect, said today he was absolutely shocked by the number of messages of solidarity he was getting from others who supported this shooting. And I think that indicates just how divisive the migration issue is in Italy and how shocking some people's feelings are against African migrants.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
According to several international treaties and conventions, refugees who have fled political persecution must be protected by their host countries from being forced to return to their countries of origin, where they might face persecution, torture, or death. However, the International Refugee Rights Initiative says these principles are sometimes ignored in East Africa. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Yotom Gidron about the group's latest report on refugee rights.
There's a principle in international law that prohibits the expulsion of any person, and that could be both a refugee or a person that has not been recognized officially as a refugee. It prohibits its expulsion in any manner whatsoever to a place where his life or freedom would be threatened or in danger. Now, this principle is enshrined in various international conventions, including the Refugee Convention, most famously, and the African Refugee Convention, or the Organization of African Unity Refugee Convention, as well as the Convention Against Torture, the Convention Against Forced Disappearances. All of these instruments prohibit the expulsion of a person into a territory where his rights will be violated.
So now please tell me some examples where these laws and conventions were broken.
For example, South Sudanese opposition figures, people who are affiliated with the South Sudanese opposition, were abducted in Kenya, mainly in Nairobi, and sent back to South Sudan over the last year or so. For example, James Gedet Take, more than a year ago, was the spokesperson of the South Sudanese opposition, was extradited from Kenya to South Sudan in November 2016, and later two activists who were affiliated with the opposition as well were both abducted in Nairobi about a year ago, and both of them are still missing. The risk is that they will face some sort of harm on the South Sudanese side. It can be torture, persecution, unfair trial, arbitrary detention, these sort of things, human rights violations.
What about elsewhere in East Africa?
There were also Burundian opposition figures, people who are associated with one of the rebel groups that were sent back from Tanzania a few months ago, and similar reports that came from other organizations of Ethiopians being sent back from Kenya, South Sudanese being threatened in Uganda, Rwandan refugees being sent back from Uganda as well. Many of these cases have not been confirmed. We don't know what happened to them. No one has made an official statement about their situation. So they have disappeared. Some people claim that they have been sent back to Burundi, but the authorities in neither Tanzania nor Burundi have confirmed this.
Perhaps there's assassinations also, people who are agents of a government who actually go into another country and just kill them and disappear them without returning them particularly.
Well, this is why it's important that governments in countries of asylum, even if they are not involved in the incidents themselves, investigate them properly, which is what's happening currently in Kenya. There is an investigation on some of these cases.
I understand that when people are extradited illegally or just ambushed, it's not just bad for them, but it's also bad for the regional conflict and the sort of the atmosphere of war that surround many of these countries.
In a place like East Africa, where neighboring countries are playing a very important role in mediating in conflicts that happen around the neighborhood, and when they persecute refugees, they create an environment in which there are no neutral mediators. They are immediately perceived as taking the side of the government. And that means that their actions are not only illegal in terms of international refugee law and probably their own national legislation, but also harmful for the political context.
That was Yotam Gidron of the International Refugee Rights Initiative, which released a report this week on preventing illegal extraditions and abductions in East Africa. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And thanks for choosing the VOA.
Hello, I'm Lino Armudu, host of Health Chat. February 6 is the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. This Tuesday, February 6, on Health Chat, we will discuss the controversial practice with our guest, Lucinda Clark, author of the suspenseful literary fiction, Amy, Cut for Life. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.